For members only, Golf Smarter number 342, published on July 17, 2012, is brought to you by the Golf Smarter Switchblade Divot Repair Tool with removable ball marker, going fast at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
More of the mental keys to improve your golf with Michael Anthony.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Michael.
Hi, Fred. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. It's interesting. We recorded our first episode before the U.S. Open, and here we are a couple days after the U.S. Open, and not something, I don't spend a lot of time talking about the PGA Tour. I don't have the resources, but I have a television, and I think the majors are a different story, and the fact that it was right here in the Bay Area where you and I both live, it makes it kind of fun. Did you get a chance to go out there at all?
I didn't get a chance to go out there. I was pretty much glued to the screen watching everything was going on, and, all of a sudden, my girlfriend came in and she said, "Oh my God, I left my wallet, my purse, and blah blah blah." So of course, I had to come to her rescue, and and I missed, I think, the last four holes. And when I left, Webb Simpson, he was one shot behind. And when I came back, he was kissing the trophy.
Well, I guess that's the difference of between having a wife and having a girlfriend. If a girlfriend, you are going to jump, and a wife, you go, "There's only three holes left. I'll be there in a minute. I'll be there in an hour." You missed it. And it's funny because I applied for credentials to go to the Open and didn't receive them, and was debating with one of my sons nonstop. Should we go? Should we not go? Should we go? Should we not go? He ended up going to one of the practice rounds, and on Monday, I've been too busy. I couldn't get away, and every day someone was calling me, going, "You want to go today?" I'm like, I can't. But I'll tell you, I've been to professional golf tournaments, and I know people are going to be kicking me for this one, but I've been to professional golf tournaments, and I just think it's better on television.
Just like football.
Just like football. I had no interest in fighting the crowd. I like to go to the bathroom when I want to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. As I've talked about multiple times, to me, when you're at a professional golf tournament, everything is happening somewhere else.
Right.
You have no idea what's going on. So
I've been to plenty of them in the past, and I find out you miss so much by being there.
Yeah, you do. And I know that the excitement of saying, "I was at the U.S. Open." Well, my son was there, and he bought me a nice logoed shirt. So it's like, okay, did you go? No, I watched it on TV like everybody else. And it was awesome. But here's what happened. You're right. You missed the last three holes.
Before you tell me what happened, I want to set this up because prior to it, to the Open, I'm doing YouTubes now, mental golf tips on YouTube. And I was talking about one of my favorite subjects, which is outcome versus process goals. Mm-hmm. And, to win the U.S. Open, that's the outcome. That's the big deal. But, it's like the catch-22. If you want something, you can't have it. If you don't want it, you can have it. And people lose sight of the process. If you do the process and stay totally in the process, who's going to win? The person who did the process better. And I made a point that, Tiger, he had just won the Memorial, and he was really on fire, and the press was saying, "Oh, is Tiger going to be back?" And I basically made a comment that, Tiger's extreme desire, he probably has more desire to be successful than any golfer out there, just by all the action that he takes to get ready. And I says, his desire is so extreme, and he's so focused on the outcome that may prevent him from accomplishing it, because it's going to keep him out of the process, keep him out of the present. And sure enough, 2 days he was right there, and then he disappeared. And you can talk about Jim Furyk now.
Yeah, well, Tiger, I know that like this kid Hostler, the amateur who is just all the rave. It's a pimple with a dimple. Here's a kid participating in the U.S. Open, and he's pimply-faced kid with braces. It's like, something's not right here. But he had game. He was awesome.
Yeah. A bogey, came back and made a birdie.
Yeah. And I would suspect that he was all about the process, and I heard that he worked with Rotella. And it's like, why should I be attached to the outcome? Because I'm here, and there's no way I'm going to win this thing. I'm going to do my best and hope for the best. But you have guys like Tiger who is winning is the only goal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's all about the outcome. It's not about participating. It's not about being there. It's winning.
Yeah.
And is that for a competitive golfer, is it wrong to want to win, to be focused on winning?
No, it's just like when I...
Or is that not the outcome?
No, well, there's two goals. The outcome is to win, and then the process are the steps that take to win. And there are many factors that go into it. And if you forget about the mental game, you're shooting yourself in the foot. And the whole key of the mental game is to stay in the moment, to stay in the present. And before, the battle begins, you say, okay, my game plan is to win. Now, how are you going to win? By staying in the present. And any time you start while you're playing, start focusing on the outcome, you create fear of losing. You're into the future. You're not into the present. When you make a bad shot, you're angry. You're in the past. You're not into the present. So in order to win, you have to forget all about winning and stay in the present. It's the catch 22.
It really is.
Yeah. If you want it, you can't have it. If you don't want it, you'll have it. So, like, I used to tell a guy going for a gold medal is like Tiger, going for 19 majors. I said, nobody in the world's done this. And so, you don't have much room for error. And so you set your sights on the outcome, but once you set your sights, you put all the energy into the moment.
Mm-hmm. And, well, it was interesting on, because he played so well the first 2 days to go into the weekend, Thursday and Friday. The buzz everywhere was, this is it, right? We're going to do it. He's there. And then he had a difficult round, but didn't knock himself out of play on Saturday. And then after the first four holes, or even the first five holes on Sunday, you can hear TVs turning off all over the country.
Yep.
You just hear click, 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 click. The signal kept getting brighter and brighter and brighter as everyone was turning off their TVs because it was like, oh, well, then Furyk is not the most dynamic personality, and Graham McDowell's interesting. Yeah, I'll keep my eye on him, but
let's talk about Jim for a couple of minutes now. Like you were talking about that, when he missed that one shot, he just dropped his, driver in frustration.
Yeah, when he I think it was on he was just doing so well, and he doesn't show any emotion. He's just stone-faced the whole time. You don't know what's going on. And he hit a drive on 16, I think it was, that just hard hook left. And he swung his club in disgust. He didn't slam it to the ground, but if there was a tree there, you could see he would maybe have wrapped his club around it. And it was the first time you saw him somewhat emotional. And you would think that hopefully it's going to be gone by the time he gets to his ball and saw that he had a way to save it. But it just kind of spiraled downhill after that. And, I don't want to use the choke word. Oh, I just did. but it's so fascinating where a guy bogeys a couple of holes and it's like, oh, he choked. Come on, he hit a couple bogeys. Well, the timing was poor.
Yeah.
It was the wrong time to hit a bogey.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's choking, but he definitely was showing his emotion. And after he had one, he put one over in the rough, near a bunker, and the ball just kind of went in a bizarre direction, and he just, got down practically on his knees and took the shaft of his club and bit down on it,
right? And that was just obvious. So you can see that he was consumed with the outcome at that point.
Oh yeah.
Whereas if he would,
because it was so close, he could taste it. I mean, that's the thing. He was so close.
Yeah, and that's when you start getting so close, all of a sudden your control over the mental game disappears because you go into the future, you get concerned about the outcome, and then there it goes. Now, let's talk about the general golfer out there. You know, most of the golfers listening, you know, to this show weren't playing in the U.S. Open. So, yeah. And you say, how does this translate, you know, to you, the golfer?
Right, right.
I says, you know, it's common knowledge that most golfers have a better practice game than when they go to play. They can't take their practice game, you know, when they're playing around the golf. And the whole reason behind that is they stop thinking. Well, in range, you can miss a ball and you don't care. You hit another ball, you hit another ball, you hit another ball. But as soon as you go to play, you miss a ball and all of a sudden, oh, my God, there goes my score. You're just totally consumed about the outcome. Whereas on the range, you're just in the process.
Right. And, you know, you get... You know, on the range, you're on a mat, you're on the grass, it's flat, it's mowed grass. All of a sudden, you get out on the course and you have uneven lies, you have hard pan, you have thick rough. It's just so different. So I think what ends up happening is you just start tensing up. You start gripping, you know, the club harder and you breathe faster. And the last time that I remember being attached to my score... During my round, I stepped up to the 18th hole going, all I have to do is bogey, and I'm breaking 80. and I hit my drive in the water. Done. I was like, why did I even say that? It's like you just don't talk about a guy pitching a no-hitter during the game.
No.
You just you don't do it.
It's just amazing. It's so simple, you know, on a conceptual basis. That
Yes, it's simple conceptually, no question about it.
Yeah. And then that's the question. Just like, you know, doing 100 push-ups. The average person can't do 100 push-ups, including myself. Now, is it hard to do 100 push-ups? It's actually pretty simple. If you just start exercising on a daily basis and you start increasing the amount of push-ups you do, you know, by one a week or maybe one or two a month, it's just a matter of time until you can do 100 push-ups. It's just the focus and the discipline. And it's,
well, Michael, that sounds like you're being attached to the outcome there.
Well, no, it's not being attached to the outcome.
You're focusing on getting to 100 push-ups.
Well, okay, well, first you have to have an outcome goal.
Ah, okay.
Once you set your goal. Like, I used to swim the San Francisco Bay. You know, I swam Alcatraz. I swam the Golden Gate Bridges.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah, and it was a piece of cake. I used to jump in the water. I was a member of the Sunrise Swimmers. At 6:30 in the morning, I was a member of the South End Rowing Club down at the foot of Aquatic Park at Hyde Street. And we would jump in Monday through Friday at 6:30. Summertime, wintertime, didn't make any difference. And we'd swim a mile or two every day, you know, during the week. And during the weekends, you know, I'd still swim on Saturday and Sunday. And so I was in phenomenal shape. So to swim Alcatraz with Golden Gate Bridge was no big deal. And in those days, we weren't using these wetsuits. No wetsuits allowed because they were for sissies. You wore your little Speedo and a little bathing cap, and that was it.
Wow.
Even during the
I'm
dead
impressed.
Of winter. And that's mental training to get yourself to jump in that water. You know,
yeah.
When it's pitch black out in January and you know it's freezing cold, you're oh my God. But anyway, if I try to do it now, I would drown. There's no way. I'm not in physical condition. It's the same thing with the mental game. If you can start training your mind that every time you catch yourself focusing on the outcome, and a lot of times you do this after you played around the golf. You critique yourself, and like we talked before on the Golf Smarter, you know, podcast that we did a couple of years ago. You know, those tape. Remember we used to talk about the tape. You know how
Golf Smarter tips.
Your brain records everything, and you're programmed to repeat your past. And if you thought about, you know, the outcome in the past, you're going to think about it in the future. Unless after the round of golf, you sit there and you talk to yourself and say, tape in the future, the next time I play, anytime I start thinking about the outcome, I'm going to snap my fingers and tell myself, forget it. Let's get back into the present. Let's take another deep breath and slowly exhale, breathe, you know, change my chemistry, and then start playing. Like on the 18th hole, when you said, all I have to do is don't hit it into water, you know, you've got to catch yourself. And if you didn't catch yourself, after the round, you have to say, the next time I play, when I start talking about the outcome, I have to step away from the ball, have a talk to myself, and say, Fred, knock it off. You're thinking about the outcome. Let's get back into the present and just see what happens. Take a couple deep breaths, exhale, get into the present, step up, and hit the ball. But you've got to do that over and over and over so it becomes instinctive. Make sense?
Yes, it does.
It takes work.
Again, and we're going back to in theory.
Yeah, it's not in theory. It's in reality. It's a question of how strong is your desire. Most people have very weak desires, unfortunately. I mean, I don't want to get on the soapbox, but look at the people in the United States. Most of them are obese. They're overweight.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's not too hard to get not to be overweight. All you do is stop eating so much and start exercising and cut back on the sweets. It's simple, but most people don't.
Discipline is a very self-discipline.
Self-discipline. Before you can have discipline, you have to have desire.
Interesting.
And once you have desire, you set a goal, an outcome goal, and then you start doing the process. And that's what life boils down to. That's what golf boils down to. That's what all sports boil down to. Doing the work, doing the process. Improve the process, the results take care of themselves.
Nice.
Forget about winning.
You know, we did we had an episode of Golf Smarter in early 2011. Episode number 274, I just looked up. Okay, 274. With Mel Soul. Are you familiar with Mel Soul? Played the South African PGA Tour, a PGA professional. And his whole thing is NATO golf, N-A-T-O, not attached to outcome. NATO golf.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like you're the first person talking about that. This is the basic rule, right?
Yeah. Everybody knows that, but nobody does it.
Right.
And you know, and I always say, if you know something and you're not doing it, you don't know it. Because if you really knew it, you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I
brought this up at the end of the last episode, and I do want to pursue this. And that would be personality types.
Okay.
And there are multiple personality types, especially in golf, but in life in general. They manifest themselves in different ways on the golf course, whether they're attached to outcome or not.
Mm-hmm.
How does that come into play, and what do you recognize as the different personality types, or does this not play into your teachings?
No, it plays totally into the teaching. You go back to the tape. You know, your tape starts working 6 months after conception. You know, while you're still in your mother's womb, it'll record everything through your entire life. And some people have different set points. Now, for some reason, people respond, they get angry very quickly. And that's a particular set point. You know, it's on their particular tape. And that's, they call them personality A type or whatever it is. But your personality type is just a reflection of your emotional response to certain facts on your tape. I've done a lot of one-on-one consultations, you know, with athletes, not only just golfers, but, you know, boxers, weightlifters, football players, you know, you name it. And we always get into the emotions. And I always, you know, once I explain the tape and I say your thoughts have two components, facts and emotions. And when you see a fact, and if you have a negative response to it, it throws your chemistry off and takes away from your performance. And then I'll ask them, I point out the four major negatives, hate, greed, jealousy, and fear. And hate's a strong word, but just say anger. And out of those four things, fear is the number one negative emotion that comes up the vast majority of the times. And then after that, anger comes up. And so you could talk about personality types. You've got one personality type that gets angry at the flash, you know, of a button. Mm-hmm. And other people, like Jim Furyk, it takes a lot to get him angry. But he got angry because he was thinking about the outcome. Whereas Rory Sabatino, you know, he gets angry real quick. Tiger Woods, if he starts missing the outcome, you can just start counting. Okay, how many more misses before he starts throwing his club or starts spitting on the green or starts cussing?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's your personality types. When he's winning, he's cool.
Sure.
And so you can almost look at every player on tour, and the vast majority of them have fear as their dominant negative emotion, and there are several of them that are very obvious. that have anger.
There's been so much conversation, so much talk about the intimidation factor that Tiger, when he is on, not only does he have, he must, you know, love possessing it, that when he starts to make his move, when he was making his move, mm-hmm. and he had the lead on Sunday, it would be an intimidation element to everybody on the course. How do you make that work for yourself? How do you do that in competition? And how do you avoid being intimidated?
You have to study a little bit. The first one is you have to understand that your nervous system, you know, is a combination of neurons and then biochemicals, neurons and biochemicals. So your nervous system is actually an alternating current. All alternating currents create an electromagnetic field, which are infinite in nature. When you're dealing with somebody like Tiger Woods, who is super, super confident, his electromagnetic field is so strong that anybody around him can pick up on it. And if they feel it, you know, it just starts. If a person doesn't have an equally strong magnetic field, they've had it. There's no way they're going to combat it. The only way you can combat it is just basically acknowledge it. Okay, this guy has a superior talent than I have. And the only prayer that I have of beating him is to get into his mind. He's confident. But all I want to do is just play him even. Because if I can play him even, I'm going to create doubt in his mind. And to explain how this could work in a different sport to make it easier to visualize, I was working with a boxer at one time. He was a lightweight, left-hander. And he was really good. He was fast. He was like a left-handed Cassius Clay, you know, Muhammad Ali. And he would say, yeah, get into these fights. And all of a sudden, these guys start coming after me with all they have. And I would say, Rudy, take a look at what you're talking about. He was so good, he would start beating the guy, and the guy was going down. He knew that if he didn't come back, you know, he was history. Rudy pretty much would win the match. So the guy would come after Rudy with all the ounce of his courage. Because, you know, when your life's on the line, you use all the energy that you have at your resources. And I says, Rudy, when somebody does that, that means he's all set to surrender. So all you have to do is play him even. You don't even worry. Just play him even. Let him give you your best shot. And after a while, after he gets sending you all of his best shots, he's going to say, oh, my God, I did everything I could under my power, and this guy's still playing me even. I said, then step it up, and he'll wilt just like that. And he says, Michael, it's a miracle. He says, it works every time. And that's the same thing. If you're playing against a person who's intimidating you, all you can do is say, I'm going to play the guy even till I can put doubt in his mind, which will take away from his confidence. And as soon as you put doubt in his mind, he's gone. Like they used to say, the devil's greatest tool is doubt. You put doubt in a person's mind, they can't perform as well. Does that make
very
sense?
Very interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it really does. It's very interesting, too, how putting doubt in someone's mind. Just play with them. I mean, just stay with them or stay one step ahead of them. But then it'll affect how they perform.
Let me tell you another good example.
Please.
I used to be really good at playing, you know, shuffleboard, barroom shuffleboard, where you throw those little pucks down the table.
Yeah.
Seen that? And one day I was playing. I don't play too much anymore, but it's just like the short game of golf. I was really good. I mean, I was like Tiger Woods at the shuffleboard table. And this one guy showed up, and he was in really good shape, you know, a little bit bigger than me. And I said, oh, my God, this guy's pretty awesome. You can feel his energy. And so we played. It was a tough game, but I ended up beating him. And after it was over, he says, let me buy you a drink. I said, okay. He says, you intimidated me, and I don't get intimidated. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, every time you played, whether you made a shot or missed a shot, your attitude never changed. He says, nothing ever affected you. And I said, well, thank you very much. I said, well, what do you do? He says, well, I coach wrestling, and I'm also the lead man for a SWAT team.
And
I said, well, what does a lead man for a SWAT team do? He says, I'm the first guy through the door, and I got to take out my man on the right before he shoots me. And I said, well, do you ever have any fear? He says, no. I said, well, I'm a mental trainer. I says, how do you get over the fear? He says, it's training, 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 training. You train so many times that you never, ever think about getting shot. You're so focused on doing your job, doing the process, that you never think about the outcome. And I said, do you ever have any fear? He said, the only fear I have is that my partner, you know, doesn't take out his men. You know, and he says, other than that, he says, no. And so it's the same thing, whether it's being the lead man of a SWAT team, playing golf, playing basketball, selling, everything. It all comes down to the mental game. And people don't put the time in to understand it. Most
it's interesting that you, it's interesting that you say selling. Now all of a sudden we've gone beyond sports, and getting into, you know, our professional lives, because we're not professional athletes. That's our passion,
right?
How do you approach? Because again, especially selling, it's all about outcome.
Yeah, I want to sell a lot of books.
I want to, I want to sell. I want to increase my revenue stream. I want to increase my commissions. It's all about selling.
Yeah.
How do you work with people like that, and how are you able to help without talking about the outcome?
You always have to talk about the outcome to get your goal. You know, don't forget. You know, you don't forget about the outcome. You say, okay, this is my goal. I want to win. I want to sell. I want to. Whatever the outcome is, and once you set your sights, then you say, okay, now what processes do I have to do in order to accomplish that? And it's just like in selling, the whole goal is it's you know, see, business has a distorted values. They're all about making money. They don't care if they're doing a good job or a bad job. They want to know, am I making money? And I say that there are some businesses that are really good. But from my experience, I tried to take my program into the business world years ago, and I left it because it requires total honesty. Business would rather make a buck than be totally honest. And I challenge any corporation out there, they want to put my program in, they'll have to take a look at their product line. Either you're benefiting your customer or you're not. And most people are more concerned, how can I make more money and get away with shaving my product's value and still have enough value to please my customer? So from that point of view, I sound kind of cynical. It's just I'm just reporting the facts of life that are out there. And but if you find a good product that that provides benefit, it's an easy thing to sell. All you have to do is go in and start talking to the prospect and explain to him why they're going to benefit from it, instead of being, you know, and their big thing is they're afraid of making a mistake. And so you have to overcome their fear. And if you think about their best interest, I'm here to help you. And like solar. Solar is a very interesting thing. It's really hot right now, and it's very beneficial. You pay your utility bill, don't you, PG&E?
Yes.
Okay, now if you stop paying your utility bill, they cut off your electricity, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, what's your average utility bill a month? Only.
Oh, I'm not even going to go there.
Okay, well, let's say it's 200. Let's say it's $200.
I will say that it went down $50 last month because I installed Nest in my house, and they now carry it at the Apple Store. If you have not checked out Nest.com and get a learning thermostat, that's my outside of golf tip for today. Check out the learning thermostat Nest.com. Awesome. Okay, so yeah, PG&E bill. My energy bill.
You know, most, if you really take a look at the technologies advanced so far, that you can actually put in a solar system for less money, you know, financing it, than what you're paying your utility bill. Let's say your utility bill is $200 and it costs you $75 to finance the thing, so you're putting $125 into your pocket every month. You know, and hey, that's, you know, that's a great thing. Plus, you're helping out the economy. And so a salesperson, all they have to do is overcome a person's objective. They say, well, gee, I can't afford it. I said, well, you pay PG&E, don't you? And they said, well, yeah. And I said, well, why don't you just stop paying them and get yourself a solar system, pay the solar and the money left over, you know, buy groceries with, or take your wife to, you know, to a movie or whatever you want. You know, so you're throwing money away. Now, that's a very simple product to sell. As long as you're strong and you overcome a person's objectives. It's what they're doing. They're saying, I can't afford it. They didn't spend the time to find out they can afford it, and they're better off doing it than not doing it. It's a battle of wills. And if you're a strong salesperson, you can explain that to them. Yes, I understand. However, did you look at this? It's all mental. Life is mental.
I've been accused of being mental. But that's something else altogether. What sports have you encountered that this topic is just not as important as it is in golf?
At a high level, it's discussed quite a bit.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Just because once you get to that level, at a high level, I guess, once you get there, the
talent level
the talent. Yeah, once the talent level is at a professional, high-end, major league-type level, I would think that there's very, very little that separates the goods from the greats.
That's you're correct, and it's all mental. Just like a baseball player.
Really?
Why can a person be a Cy Young winner 1 year and all of a sudden have a hard time winning the next year? Did his talent disappear? Mental.
Yeah.
So every sport, when you get up to the high level, it's all mental. Unless you have certain God-given talents, but even still, God-given talents don't win all the time because some people, get in there and the God-given talent person, he chokes. He starts thinking about the outcome. He gets out of his game. But the best ones always get into the process. Michael Jordan, he was totally into the process. Mm-hmm. People do miracles. Just like golfers, like when Tiger was in the role, he was in the process. But just like the regular golfer, the regular golfer, they don't have the time to practice, or they don't choose to take the time to practice. But most of them just don't have the time. Like a professional golfer, that's his whole life. It's practicing, getting in shape, being disciplined, and things like that. But you always have time to work on your mental game. Because whether you're at work or whether you're commuting, if you start understanding it, your emotions would affect your mental game. And your tape, you're going to repeat your emotions. Like when you're driving, if it's traffic, if you're getting angry, that's a great opportunity to work on your mental game. Hey, I got to understand, I have a fact, there's traffic, I'm getting upset. This is a good chance to work on my mental game. And there's countless times during the day when you run across negative emotions. And most people, they just accept their negative emotions during the daytime because it doesn't affect their performance as quickly as it does on a golf course. But you can practice your mental game all day long. And if you do, when it comes time to play golf, it's real easy to control your emotions, which are a lot easier than if you don't.
And it gets harder and harder when you're having, and golf is one of those sports that you just don't get better every day, every time you go out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the range of scores, outcomes, on any given day could swing 10 to 20 strokes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, you can go out, like last time I played, shot an 81. Today, I shot an 87, and then right in between, I'll shoot a 95. And once things start consistently not, and I try to, let it all go. But then I'll get to a spot where it's like, okay, I've had five really bad shots, not just holes. I mean, mm-hmm. five bad holes. It starts, the doubt rises. And the frustration increases. It's not so easy to break away from that. How would you do that?
It's mental training, Fred. You cannot get away from it. If you don't spend the time every day working on your emotions, learning how to transfer your emotions from negative to positive, or negative to neutral. So that when all of a sudden you're having a bad day and each shot gets worse and worse and your chemistry gets down and down, you just have to say, hey, today's goal is to keep a good attitude and not be negative and just play one shot at a time and don't care about the score, because today we're all about the process, and the process is to play this with a good attitude.
I love that. I love that because, you know, it's like before every round you should agree with your playing partners. Okay, here's today's rules, right? Here's our rules for today. You know, anything inside of 2 feet, pick it up. If you find a ball, it's yours. Or, you know, any rules you want to make, as long as everyone agrees on those rules, then you're fine. But I think you have to agree with yourself. Here's how I'm going to, you know, I don't know what's going to be the outcome on today's game. I don't know. I know that I want to perform well. But if things don't go well, I have to agree with myself. Got to let it go. Don't get worried about it. You know, how many times have we had bad days like that and feel like you want to just walk off the course and then just, I quit. I don't care. Let me just finish these 4 or 5 holes and I'm done. I want to go home. And all of a sudden, those 4 or 5 holes, everything starts to work again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, we talked about sales earlier. It's the same thing. And earlier in my lifetime, I used to do a lot of selling. You know, I was, you know, developing my program. I would work with the athletes for free, and I would go out in nighttime, get jobs, you know, selling. And I was really, really good at selling if I had a product I believed in. And some days you'd go out there and you'd be out there knocking on doors. You'd knock on 100 doors and no. Other days you go out there, you couldn't knock on 100 doors because the first 20 said yes, yes, yes. And you were too busy writing up the orders. You never got to do 100 things. And so why is one day miserable and the next day it's so successful? But you got to keep the same attitude. You can't get too high. You can't get too low. You know, it's all numbers and they all balance out at the end of the day or at the end of the week or at the end of the month. You know, baseball players, for example, the hitters, they have a rule. They look at 10 bats in a row. During 10 bats, if they had 0 for 10, that's over with. They start fresh on the next 10. Then if you get 5 for 10, that's shooting 500. So they figured, okay, we got 5 for 20. That's 250. And so that's how they keep their sanity. And it's the same thing when you're playing. You've got to understand that my attitude comes first, the score comes second. And if you can learn to control your attitude, no matter whatever happens out there, you're going to find out you consistently shoot better, lower scores, and the spread is a lot smaller. You're not going to have a 20, you know, shot spread. You may have a 10 shot, and then if you can start working, then you'll come into a 5 shot spread. But it all comes down to, you know, the how much energy you put into mastering the present moment. And I had my 4-step routine that we talked about, and, you know, smarter, you know, golf. It's the basic, you know, instinct. Haven't said this for a while, so I got to think for a second again. Feedback, relax, preparation, instinctive execution. And so after the shot, you have a chance to look at the feedback. Okay, what happened? Good, bad, indifferent. And then once you learn from the feedback, you say, okay, I've got to relax. That's history. Let's get back into the present. So you relax. Then as you're approaching the ball, you start preparing yourself with a good attitude. And what's the distance? What is the lie? What is my this plan of attack? And then you step up. You don't think you hit the ball instinctively. And then feedback. What happened? And if you can do that on every single shot, your attitude stays consistent. And that's all you can control is your attitude. You can't control the golf shot.
No. Sometimes I like to play like in like you're saying, a baseball player doing 10 at-bats and then move on. Like I'll play in groups of 3 holes. Okay, I want to see if I can just play one over on these 3 holes. And I know that I'm already saying that I want to be part of the outcome, but if I just break it down, it seems to be easier, and I can also let go of things. It's like, okay, I'm done with that now, move on. But I should just do that hole by hole, I guess.
Well, you know, that gives you good range because you're playing 3 holes, and that's my outcome goal. But how do you accomplish it? You do it one shot at a time, and at the end of the you know 3 rounds, you take a look. Okay, now how good was I with my mental game? Did I play one shot at a time, or was I worrying about, you know, shooting 2 over and, you know, as I was playing?
Yep.
And then what is good about that is that you had a chance after 3 holes to get some feedback to see how well you did with your mental game and then play the next, you know, 3 holes.
Awesome.
And then you can learn from that and say, okay, let's play the next 3 holes. And as you do this, by the time you played, you know, 9 holes, your mental game is starting to really get into shape. And I always tell people, if you play par, you know, for the first 15 holes and then you birdie the last three, you know, you're shooting a pretty good score.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so why worry about shooting par? You know, and say, oh, my, I should be shooting, miss this here and I miss this one there. Don't worry about it.
Right.
I said, they'll come.
And definitely don't worry about it, because then you're going to start freaking out. Oh, my God, I haven't made a mistake in a while. It's a kiss of death.
I mean, I was caddying for one guy. You know, he was in green in regulation the first, you know, nine holes. And he was at par. And he said, my God, I should be at least three under by now. I said, shut up. I said, one shot at a time. I said, knock it off. And so he ended up, you know, making six birdies on the last nine.
Wow. Wow. You know?
And that wouldn't have happened if he didn't keep his cool.
I would love to be there here to caddy, say to somebody, shut up.
You know, you got to knock it off.
Yeah.
I said, knock it off. You know, your anger's getting to you.
Yeah.
I said, what's wrong with you? Don't you listen to what I'm telling you? And they're, I want to throw this club and hit you in the head with it.
Yeah, you're probably not shooting 59 today, so just relax.
Yeah. It's just a... But it's amazing. But this program that I have, the Mental Keys to Improve Your Golf, it works every time. All they have to do is, you know, read the material, you know, get the CD and just listen to it over and over, and then just pay attention and to your mental game.
Well, that's a great segue there, because I was just about to say the two books, Mental Golf Tips and the Mental Keys to Improve Your Golf, guaranteed to lower your score. By Michael Anthony. They're both available on the Golfer's Mart, in the Golfer's Mart at golfsmarter.com. And also, though, if you have not checked out Golf Smarter Tips, a year's worth of 5-minute, 6-minute shows with Michael. We did like 52 shows or something.
Yeah.
Golf Smarter Tips are still available in iTunes. And even though we recorded them a couple years ago, they're still valid. I mean, the points don't change, and the training is all there, and you can just go through it. You can get his CDs. You can go check him out at mentalkeys.com and also his YouTube videos. Look up Michael Anthony, Mental Keys.
Don't forget my CD, Using the Mental Keys to Polish the Wheel. That's powerful. Put that on your mart.
Well, you know, I this is the digital age. Nobody buys CDs. Sorry, Michael.
Well, when they stop driving their car to the, you know, to the golf course, you know, I'll agree with you.
Well, oh, why? You think people put in CDs? They don't hook people into their iPod and their iPhones and their Android phones and their Bluetooths and
See, the only way they can get it is to get the CD to download it into it, because that's the only format that it's available in.
Well, you should make it downloadable.
I haven't figured out. Amazon hasn't set it up that way yet. It's, yeah, I've tried. At least I
do it from your website.
Well, on the website, it's just that it's more complicated than that, Fred. I've just pulled everything out and put it into Amazon and other distributors.
Well, that's one of the better distributors you can have, no question.
Yeah, Amazon's
about
a good distributor. You know, your website's a good distributor.
Oh, thank you.
You know, it's really good. It's a pleasure being here, you know, talking to you and talking to all the golfers, you know, that are listening. You know, I do get, you know, people come in, they say, I heard about you on the podcast. So, you know, so it's working.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, thank you. Hey, it was great to have you on again, Michael. It's always a pleasure to speak to you, even if we separated by a couple weeks or a couple years, but it's always great to hear from you again. Thanks so much for coming back on the show and being on our Members Only podcast.
And it's my pleasure. Thank you, Fred.
Listen, I received an email from a Golf Smarter member, Paul Stanley in Augusta, Kansas, about his divot repair tool, and I just wanted to share it with you. He says, hey, Fred. See, you already got that part. Hey, Fred, I love my Switchblade divot repair tool. I'd received a repair tool from a friend that I hadn't seen more than a couple of times since we graduated in 81. I like it, but it kept poking me and putting holes in my pants. I'm sending him a Switchblade divot repair tool as well. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the continued support. And remember, as a Golf Smarter member, not only do you get 25% discount on the repair tool, but if you order 5, I'll send you 2 for free. Wait a minute. That's a hell of a deal. Oh, well, I'd rather you be a Golf Smarter ambassador and hand these things out to your foursomes. So pick yours up now at Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.